Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and we're going to be dealing with the paranormal today. A little bit of this, a little bit of that, and I'm so delighted you're able to join us. We're going to be traveling to Brooklyn, New York, because we're going to be talking to Dennis McMahon. We're going to be talking about his personal story into the paranormal. His book is titled Into the Mystic. Dennis, I want to welcome you to the show.
Thank you, Donna.
Your story was a very interesting one, in as much as there were some rather unique circumstances that caused you to go into a direction one would not expect an attorney to follow. And you are obviously a writer. You've done some editing. You are an attorney. You said you had spontaneous mystical events. And you decided you were going to explore. You just weren't going to accept the circumstances as they happened to you. You wanted to know more. It wasn't enough just to have them.
That's
you
correct.
Went into shamanism. You worked with past life regressions. You had all kinds of various experiences. And you decided you wanted to bring this book out, sharing your experience, since you actually interacted with different indigenous cultures, and also you decided that you were, I believe, wanting to do this for yourself, because there was an awareness that seemed to grow through your book as you were writing it.
That's absolutely true, yes.
And as I was reviewing it and I was going through it, I thought, this man has had a journey, but in writing the book, he has created another one.
That's a very good observation.
Now, tell us how these started. I understand it was 15 years after the death of your son.
That's correct. My son Ryan was 2 weeks old when he passed away, essentially as a result of medical malpractice. And at the time, my grief was overwhelming, and I really didn't know how to deal with it. I didn't know that I wasn't dealing with it. I listened to your show yesterday, and you had the two women on talking about how important it is to deal with the death of a child. I hadn't done that.
Mm-hmm.
And I had never done so up until about 15 years later when my godmother died. And I went to her funeral, which was being held in the cemetery out on Long Island called Calvary, where Ryan was also buried. And I had never visited his grave. And while I was attending my godmother's funeral, I distinctly felt someone or something basically calling me to his grave. I don't know how better to express that, but I didn't go that day, but returned a week later, and it was one foggy morning at sunrise, January 1997. It was all quite emotional for me. And while I was at Ryan's grave, I had a very clear vision of him appearing to me out of the cosmos, it seemed, looking to be, though, the teenager he would have been had he survived his ordeal on Earth. And he asked me, "What's the matter, Dad?" And I cried out. I said, "I'm sorry, I never visited your grave before, you know." And he goes, "That's all right, Dad, that's all right." And with that, I felt the true forgiveness, which I didn't even realize I needed. And at the time all of this was going on, it felt so very natural. But later, as I'm walking away from the grave and driving home, my logical side kicked in, and I really began questioning my own sanity. So I started doing some research and read in a book by medium Suzanne Northrup that children who cross over continue to grow up on the other side, which resonated very strongly with me because it was exactly what I had experienced in my vision of Ryan, and that resonance is what led me to delve deeper, and I've been researching mysticism and the paranormal ever since.
You had a unique experience with a woman. She was middle-aged, she was Caucasian, and she was dressed all in black. Now, that's not unusual to experience something like that in the New York subway. I'm being a little stinker when I say that. But in New York, you find everything. I mean, it is a panorama of costumes and people that I just think is magical in a way. It's just amazing to me.
It was magical, and this was actually before Ryan was born. I mean, my wife, now my ex-wife, was carrying Ryan, and I'm on the F train riding back to my place in Bensonhurst, and this woman dressed totally in black, a black cloak, dressed down to the floor, and for some reason I said, is she not wearing anything but, like, usually if someone is wearing black, they'll have a watch that maybe has a hint of silver in it, or maybe they're wearing gold earrings or something, or maybe a little chain. This woman had nothing. She was totally in black. And the scary part I saw in retrospect, at the time it didn't bother me because, as you say, on the subways, you know, you get everything. But she was holding her arms out as if she was holding a baby. But there was no baby in her arms. She was cradling a baby, and the cloak fell down by her elbows, and her arms were all just kind of like blood red. And I said, wow, that's strange, you know, even for the subway. But then after the whole experience with Ryan, you know, I looked back on that moment, and I thought, you know, it was like she was bringing an omen to me. The baby was not going to be there, and she was dressed in black, symbolizing death. And the blood, and I don't have to go into that, but the baby was essentially forced out of the mother, and that's what traumatized him and essentially killed him. But I came to view this woman as kind of like, in retrospect, an omen of what was to come, and that's a large theme in my book. If we go back and look at certain things in our lives, and I've done this a couple of times, you can see that we've been having these experiences all along, but we weren't really tuned in.
That's true.
My book is to say, hey, this is what happened to me. You know, when I discuss some of these things with people, they would say, yeah, and you know what happened to me? And they would tell me their stories. And you kind of open up that type of discussion. And one story after another, pretty soon you're validating each other. It's so hard to get validation with any of this kind of stuff because it is so tricky. But if you share the stories, you will get stories in return and validate your own experiences. And that's part of what the book is about.
You make a comment that it takes courage to go forward in the face of fear. These experiences that you were having, especially about your son, they were causing you to say, there's got to be something else going on here. So your curiosity, there was a driving factor inside of you. At the same time, it can be fearful or frightening. Maybe that's a better way to phrase it. To someone that never talked to anybody about experiences like this. And I know I've had callers that have said, gee, this is frightening to me. I just don't understand it. And the best way to combat any kind of fear is to look it straight in the eye and to become educated. And that's what you started to do. That you started going to different individuals. One was a woman, Suzanne, who was a very talented lady, and you then found that there were things that you wanted to learn about. Who was Oscar, and what did Oscar teach you?
Oscar Santillan, I believe you're referring to.
Mm-hmm.
He was a shaman from South America, the high Andes, and the story with his people was that, you know, the Spaniards came to that area, and basically the indigenous people took to the hills because they didn't want to have their culture taken away. I mean, many were dominated and subjugated and mass murdered. But his tribe happened to escape high into the Andes, so he had a method of shamanism that survived 5,000 years. And what I like about shamanism, and the rock art really takes it back in certain instances all around the world, 35,000 years, so it predates all organized religion, and you could see kind of where religion pulled from shamanism if you start to get into it. But he gave me some indications about, you know, how to clear my energy essentially in the morning and showing reverence for nature and Mother Earth and the sun especially.
Let's talk about how you got into past life regression. Now, some of my listeners might think that's a little far out.
It is far out, and, you know, as an attorney, if I spoke about this to anybody who was, you know, hanging out with me in the courtrooms, then, you know, forget about it. You know, they would say, okay, Dennis, what do you want to talk about next? But it is kind of far out. And how I got into past life regression, you talk about facing fear, and one of the fears I developed in my 20s, actually, was a fear of closed places, or claustrophobia, as it's commonly known as. And I was getting nowhere with psychiatrists and psychologists, and I just could not manage it. So I came to the conclusion, I don't know how I came to this, but somewhere along the line, someone had told me that, you know, if you know the cause of the fear, and I knew where I thought was the cause of the fear, but that wasn't helping me, then you could solve it. So I said, well, that theory is not true. Then I knew that I felt as a kid I had discovered, I go in detail into the book, that I was essentially my Uncle Buster reincarnated. He died in World War II at the very tail end of World War II. He was shot down in a bomber over Japan. And my thinking was that he died in those claustrophobic conditions. And if my theory is correct, that I am he, maybe that carried over into this life somehow, because I was then at that age at which he died. So I visited a past life regressionist, and I went back to that moment in time, and the vision was quite clear. It was astounding. This woman, Dawn, I identify her in the book as Dawn, she took me through it, and it was incredible. When I was essentially a spirit visiting that scene in the past life regression, there was no fear about him. And he didn't experience the fear that I theorized that he would have if I was caught in that situation he's a bombardier, he's trapped in a B-52 super fortress, he's going down, you know, that's got to instill some fear. But it seemed like he was dead before that fear really ever kicked in.
Mm-hmm.
So, that my theory didn't work with that, but, adventuring into shamanism and getting into spirituality gave me some avenues with which to deal with fear, and I'm now able to manage the claustrophobia much more effectively. I ride the subways, I ride elevators. It's not comfortable for me. I wouldn't say that it's completely gone from my system, but at least I'm not running away from it anymore, and I manage it.
You have some fascinating stories in your book. One is about the magic man that you met who was gambling, and he just couldn't seem to lose, and then he just seemed to disappear. What did that experience give you?
This is the experience that, when I look back on it again, at the time it was just this magic man I'll get into a little bit, but this was the experience that brought the feeling of certain numbers being associated with you, that, you know, your own spirits and spirit helpers and guardian angels and saints and deceased loved ones who have passed over can communicate with you through these numbers. But I was a kid, I think I was about 7 or 8 years old, and I was at St. Mark's Bazaar. I was brought up Roman Catholic. The bazaar was a big thing, and I think it was a Sunday afternoon, and I go over to the gambling wheel, and the gambling wheel had three die in each slot, and it had a number from 1 to 6. Sometimes it'd be all 1, sometimes it'd be 2, 3, 4, sometimes it'd be 5, 5, 5, and you would bet on a number from 1 to 6, and if your number came out, you win. If your number didn't come out, you'd lose. And there was just something special about this guy. He was like, he just seemed like, if you were casting Clint Eastwood, if you were doing a biography on Clint Eastwood, he might have been the star of the movie. But he always bet on 5, and he didn't bet all the time. And he just kept winning and winning and winning. And then people would copy what he was doing, and he'd stop betting. And then they'd leave, and he'd resume betting. So by the end of, maybe 45 minutes, an hour, he just had, a fistful of dollars, and he just gave the money back to the booth attendant and left. And one of the guys goes, yeah, he always does that. He always wins, and he always just gives us the money back. But the fives always stuck with me at that point. And then later on in life, and this was after Ryan had passed away, and again, maybe, he would have been 16 years old at the time, 17, and I just got out of my car, and I looked down, and there was just this batch of nickels. Nickels and a few dimes, and the fives just came to me very strongly. And ever since that time, it felt like the fives had a special meaning for me. And this is not like a numerology thing. This is more a personal feeling that there's some special energy associated with five. And it's proven to be true. If I'm riding in a car, sometimes I'll see license plates with fives and a mixture of letters, and I'll get a message through that. I don't know how it happens. I can't possibly describe how it happens, but there's no doubt in my own mind from a subjective standpoint that something special is going on.
You talk also in your book about a gathering of shamans. Now, all this stuff is taking place in Brooklyn. And, of course, anybody that's familiar with New York will say, well, anything can happen in New York, for heaven's sake. It could be Brooklyn. It can be Manhattan. It doesn't make any difference. But your openness in being able to share your experiences, I think, is important, because when we can share what we've gone through, hopefully it's going to empower someone else to be comfortable with whatever they might be experiencing. You got involved with a particular retreat, annual gathering of shamans, prophets, and star energy, you call it in your book. And it was teachers coming in from all over the world who wanted to pay their respects to the earth and to other things, and they're bringing their culture with them. How did this impact you?
Well, it had a tremendous impact. I had been encouraged by Dawn, the woman who took me through the past life regression. We had done some other things to take up shamanism, and I was afraid to do it. It just sounded kind of scary to me. But she encouraged me to do it. I had a world of respect and still do for her, and I went to this shaman drumming circle at Tatsumi in Greenwich Village, which would be about 10 miles north of where I live in Brooklyn, but in the heart of Greenwich Village. And then from there I heard about this gathering of shamans that was actually held in upstate New York, Rhinebeck. It's about 100 miles from Brooklyn. It's in beautiful country there. And like you say, I don't know if you've ever heard of John Perkins. John Perkins wrote the book Economic Hitman, and he's had a lot to do with shamanism and stuff, and he was bringing in shamans, coordinating their entry into the country, and you didn't really know which shamans were going to turn up, who was going to have visa problems, who was going to be stuck in the mountains in the Andes, whatever, but they came from all over, and they brought their cultures with them, and they took us through shamanic exercises and shamanic healing practices. And it was just fabulous. I know that I write a story about this in the book. I had been roomed with a stranger, and he had this atomic snoring problem, and I was like so mad at him. And I went to this pre-dawn ceremony, and it had to do with taking a candle and throwing it in the fire, and taking your negative energy and putting it in the candle and throwing it in the fire. And I did that, and I swear to you, my anger towards this person melted, just like the candle melted in the campfire. And it didn't stop me from looking for another room, and luckily I was able to get another room. You know, I was sorry for him. I could, you know, feel bad about the fact that he had sleep apnea and all this stuff, but, you know, I just thought I was so angry with him for having imposed that condition on a total stranger, me in this case. You know, he should have been having a room by himself. But all that just kind of melted away. And also at that gathering of shamans, they did this other exercise, and you were bringing the energy of the earth into your body. And at the time, I was going through some prostate problems. My father had died of prostate cancer, so, you know, prostate problems can be serious for me. And there was a special energy about it. I don't know what happened, but the symptoms were gone, and I went for my next checkup, and I was fine. And so the shamanism stuff, which basically tells you that a lot of the physical ailments that you have are symptomatic of a problem with your energy body. They believe that there is an energy body, and that's where things can go wrong. And if you take care of your spiritual side, your energy body will also be taken care of, and in turn, your physical and your mental health will be benefited by this.
You had the opportunity to hear John Perkins, and apparently he said that he had been advised by some shamans from South America that if he wanted to fulfill his goal of saving the rainforest, and I'm quoting directly from your book, then people's dreams had to change, for if we give energy to our dreams, they materialize. How did that have meaning for you?
Well, this is a tremendous issue, and I don't want to get too political, Donna, because I know we try to avoid politics on your show. But, you know, there is in America a certain element among us that money means everything. And they don't care about destroying the earth if it can bring revenue. So he kind of, you know, woke me up to the fact that, you know, we're global citizens now. We're all kind of interdependent on one another, and we need really to take care of the earth. You know, the earth is going to survive no matter what we do, but we may make it inhabitable for us to survive on earth, and that's not a good thing because the earth is a beautiful place. This is a great place for souls to incarnate, to experience life, to obtain soul growth, and to have relationships with other people. And if you care for the earth will care for you. And I came away from Perkins' speech feeling much more connected to the earth and caring much more about the earth. And, you know, you end up doing little things as much as you can. It could be as simple as recycling. It could be as simple as buying a car that doesn't burn so much gas, that kind of thing. Giving to certain organizations that fight to preserve the earth against the people who would just ravage it for its resources.
I had the chuckle when I was reading your story about being in a divorce court and getting the statement from an attorney that is this: I've been through the Brooklyn divorce courts as a defendant and as an attorney, and it's the pits. It's much better to settle. The only people who will make out in a contested divorce are the lawyers. And I'm reading this and I'm saying, you're an attorney. This is a very good statement.
Yeah, well, I'm kind of a whistleblower in that regard, Donnie. You know, and, you know, speaking as a member of the New York Bar, it's true. The divorce laws and the divorce court system, they're just totally idiotic, and they promote fighting and injustice. Well, that's mm-hmm. great for the lawyers who make money off of that, but it's not great for the people who are going through it. And I had a friend of mine who he and his wife, and I knew her too, they were getting divorced, and she hooked into an attorney that was really pushing all her emotional buttons. You got to take this guy to the cleaners. He did this and he did that. And, you know, it was just insane. But again, the lawyers don't make money unless the people are fighting. And at the time I was dating a spiritually minded woman. I was just starting to get into this, and she advised me to get to the courthouse early and envision blue, white, and violet light flooding the room while asking spirit to allow me to do the best I could and to let there be the best outcome for all involved. So I drive to downtown Brooklyn. As I'm pulling into the parking garage, on the oldie station comes Norman Greenbaum's song, Spirit in the Sky. I don't know if you're familiar with that song.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but
absolutely.
I think, this is going to be interesting, you know? And I get to the courtroom early because I got to travel on the elevator to the 19th floor, and that's never a picnic. I'd rather do it alone than in the crowd elevator, so I'm really early. But I get to the courtroom, I can literally feel. I could feel that the room was just packed with spirits. This was some sort of educational show for some group of spirits. I had no idea who they were. But I did as my lady friend had suggested, and later during the trial, I was in the process of destroying the wife's credibility during cross-examination. The court reporter's brand new stenotype machine just breaks. He has to run somewhere else to get a new one, and since we're the only ones on the calendar, the judge decides to handle the matter informally while we're all waiting, and like she should have done really 2 years before that. And I tell her what my client's very generous offer was, and she goes, and they turned that down? Let me talk to them. 10 minutes later, she talks to them, and the case is settled. Now, you know, I assume you've heard this, that spirits will often work through electronic gadgets like phones, TVs, radios, and computers, but this was the first time that I ever heard of spirits impacting events by disabling a stenotype machine. Anyway, I leave the courthouse. This is a good coda here. And there was a commercial on the radio, so I switched to the classic rock station. And again comes on that song by Norman Greenbaum, Spirit in the Sky. And I hadn't heard that song in years, and there I am hearing it right before and right after that courtroom scene, which was all very validating for me.
Well, as an attorney, your life has been changed. Talk about the experience that you had in your chapter, A Gift for Tammy. Who's Tammy? And why was
Tammy is a cousin of mine. We lived next door to each other growing up. She's a few years younger than me, so she kind of looked up to me as like an older brother type. She didn't have any older brothers. And we're very close. And her mother is the godmother I mentioned earlier, who died in December 96. And I went to the grave, and I felt, I went to the service, and I felt like I was being called to Ryan's grave. But she's one of the DPs, or dead people, as Suzanne Northup calls them, that comes to me now and again. And it's just in a flash. I don't want them to make this sound like she comes over and we hang out for 3 hours or something, but it's just like a flash of information, a download almost. And I'm thinking about buying a gift for her daughter, my cousin Tammy, and I'm walking past this place. I'm going dancing, and I'm walking past this place in Manhattan, and I see this basket, and I hear in my, you know, I don't know what the equivalent of third eye is, but I hear in my third ear, if you will, that good gift for Tammy. And I just go in. I look at the price. The price is $55, which, as I explained before, 55 means a lot to me. I just thought, that's it. I bring it to her for Christmas, and Tammy just flips out. She'd been wanting one, all this kind of stuff, and it was just like a great gift. And there have been other gifts over the years that her mother has come. You know, when I thought about getting a gift for her, she just clicks in with me. I know that this is going to be a good gift for her.
Mm-hmm.
Very simple, practical application of these kind of spiritual principles.
It's amazing when you start paying attention to whatever spontaneous flashes you get. There's a synchronicity that occurs. It's like you're in the right place at the right time, picking up the right thing, saying the right thing. It's great. You've got a story about your car, your brand new car, and you had had a Saturn. The poor thing was just about ready to give up the ghost. How did that evolve for you?
I had a Saturn, and I wanted to get another Saturn, but I went back to the showroom. The gas mileage, they were getting less gas than they got when I bought it in 97, and this was like, you know, 6 or 7 years later. And so I'm looking around shopping for cars, and I ended up at a BMW dealership. And I don't know why I went there, because I really didn't want a BMW. And, you know, for somebody who's now supposed to be getting into spiritualism, a BMW is a bit materialistic. You know, so I had this conflict going. And anyway, I go in. I said, let me just go look at this car. And I look in, and the guy tells me what he has available. And I just felt like he kind of, like, pushed himself, and he kind of pushed the lease on me. And I just kind of accepted it, and I was second-guessing myself. And I had went through all sorts of changes about this, but I didn't really see any other car that I liked as much as this one. So he gives me the keys finally. We go to the closing, and he gives me the keys, and I look on the key ring, and the phone numbers for the place. They had, like, there were two phone numbers. One had 55 in it, and the other one had 555 in it, so they were like five fives on the key ring. So that energy was like, relax, enjoy the car. So for 3 years I had it. I had a great time in the BMW, but this time around I did get a Prius.
Uh-huh.
Oddly enough, when I bought the Prius, the bill was like 20-something thousand, 666. I said, what? Wait a minute, I get the BMW, it's all fives. I get the Prius, it's all sixes. I made them put an extra satellite radio in the car to change that number. I was getting freaked out. But it's been so far so good with the Prius as well.
Now, Dennis, I know we don't have a lot of time left. Do you have a website that people can go to find out more about your experiences and the stories that you have to share?
Yes, I do, Donna. JourneyIntoTheMystic.com. JourneyIntoTheMystic.com. And I tell you what, if I may say this, if somebody comes and says they heard me on your show, they can email me through that site. I'll send them a free electronic copy of the book.
Oh, hey, for those of you listening, a free electronic copy, JourneyIntoTheMystic.com.
That's it, Donna.
And he will send it to you. Just be sure you mention the Donna Sebo Show. Dennis, before we close out, you have had so many experiences, and I know your experiences will be ongoing. When you think about what you have evolved through, what would you like to leave as a thought with my listeners? Because there are so many of them that are going through their own journeys, through their own explorations of the unknown to discover the depths of their own capabilities and talents. What would you want to leave them as a gift?
I would say follow your heart. And if you are feeling inquisitive, don't be afraid to do some exploring. As I see it, following a spiritual path can not only help us get the most out of this life from a soul growth perspective, but simultaneously, as I mentioned before, help us physically and mentally in our everyday lives. We're all body, mind, and spirit, and the condition of one aspect will necessarily impact the others. Just like when you are depressed, you might be more susceptible to getting physically ill. If your spirit is not in a healthy condition, your body and mind are more susceptible to illness. So that's why it's important to take care of your whole being, body, mind, and spirit. And as you say, Donna, follow your heart.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure having you as a guest. Dennis McMahon is my guest. Last name is spelled M-C-M-A-H-O-N. His book is into the mystic from the streets of Brooklyn, and go to his website, journeyintothemystic.com. Mention the Donna Sebo Show, and you'll get a free copy of the book. You'll get an email copy. So that's a deal that's really a good one, so you might want to do that. And share it with your friends so that they can do the same. Dennis, thank you again for being my guest.
Oh, thanks a million, Donna. It's been great. Love your show.
Thank you. This is Donna Sebo, and we're going to be taking a break. Don't go away. We've got more good things to share. We're going to be right back.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717, ttap.com.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, it's Donna. Telephone lines are now open. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Here are the toll-free numbers, 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756. And remember, all I need is your first name or your initial. And, of course, I love to know where you're calling from. And then after that, I'll tell you what I perceive, and you're welcome then to ask me a question about anything that you like. I want to remind those of you that are in the Northern California area, we've got a special event coming up, yes, next week. Not this weekend, but next weekend. It's the Wisdom Festival, and I'm going to be there speaking, and also I am going to have an opportunity to interact with you doing many consultations. But the Wisdom Festival is an annual event. And there are people coming in from all over the country who are going to be participating, giving classes, speaking. They'll be selling products and services. So if you'd like to have some information about this wonderful event, go to their website, wisdomfestival.com, and you'll get the lowdown on everything. Again, that's wisdomfestival.com. I'm going to be there live in person. Yes, I'll be there to talk to you. So do stop by and say hello, because I would just love to have the opportunity to interact with you. And this, doing the appearances like I've been doing, it's just such a joy to have some of you come up and say, gee, I really enjoy the show, or why don't you talk about XYZ? I'm always interested in that kind of feedback. So, oh, also, don't forget, If you have a special story, something that you feel that I should be made aware of, then send me an email. You can send it to Donna@DelphiInternational.com. That's Donna@DelphiInternational.com. Nellie Furtado made a comment that I really liked. She said, you watch your child try new things every day, and they don't care if they make a mistake. Why should you have that fear? And I thought about that when I read it, and it was a very well-stated perception. Why do we end up getting all of these fears? It's really amazing stuff how we deal with things and how we will fabricate sometimes fears. I know I've done it, for heaven's sakes. Why do we do it? Well, quite often it's because that's what we're told we're supposed to do. And we don't really make ourselves aware of it until we become mindfully conscious of what we're doing and why we're doing it. It's a very interesting patterning. Often we have habits and we'll say, why in the world am I doing a particular action? Why is it I'm afraid to speak up? And when we start examining it, you don't need a psychiatrist for this. You can do it yourself. Maybe you won't have the answer right away, but if you put into the front of your mind clarity, I'd like clarity on this, and you never know when you're going to pick up a book, or you're going to hear somebody say something on television, or you might be standing in a line at your grocery store and hear a conversation that somebody's having, and you get this aha, that, wow, that's why I do what I do. It is a challenge to be able to take that positioning of being mindfully conscious of what's going on around you. And it is fascinating how, when you put yourself into the mindset, not unlike my guest Dennis, when he started paying attention to the things that were going on around him and to what he'd consider his flashes, he'd be in the right place at the right time. Maybe sometimes he'd know he wasn't in the right place at the right time. This is all a part of life. I can think back on experiences that I've had, and I ended up doing things that I knew down deep, not intellectually, but my own intuitive operating mechanism was practically screaming at me to not do something, and yet I would do it anyway. And then afterwards, I'd look back and say, why didn't I listen? What's the matter with me? Well, part of it is that in the process of living, we need to learn how to trust. We grow up with certain patterns, certain belief systems, whatever cultural environment we come from, and they can be good, bad, or indifferent. There's no big label here. It's just what is. All of us have it. But when you become mindfully present and you start questioning, you'll learn to listen to that inner part of you that really does know the right balance for you. And it's a very difficult thing to describe in words because it has more to do with a feeling, a sensitivity. Your whole sensory faculty is in operation, and you need to be aware that it's all of it that's working to give you this feedback. So part of what we do when we grow through experiences, like my guest was describing in his book, Into the Mystic, part of what you grow through is the understanding that you're naturally endowed with this. I had a conversation when I was on a business trip with a lady who is exploring the intuitive area. She's exploring the psychic area, and she's been talented all of her life. However, in her life experience, it just didn't seem to fit. She didn't seem comfortable with it, or her environment wasn't complementary to her exploring it. Well, here she is as a mature woman, and she's able to do her exploration now. And she was very pleased to have a chance to chat with me, and I was also pleased to get to know her. She's just a delightful individual. And one of the things that she said, and this is very natural, is, I'm fascinated with it, but at the same time, I'm frightened by it. And I said, oh, fiddle-dee-dee, don't be frightened. Why did she say she was frightened? And maybe you've even said the same thing. Frequently, it's because of false beliefs. We have empowered something in the way of a belief and an attitude that really doesn't have any merit to it. And it's as normal as breathing. We all do it. We all have particular perceptions. We have filters that we put on our thinking and what we observe. It's, again, very natural. The challenge is to be mindfully present, and I'm repeating that again, and ask yourself why you're afraid. Ask yourself why you have that filter. Ask yourself for clarity so that you can get past it. That's what education really is all about. Too many times, we'll get locked into belief systems. And my husband shares a story that I really enjoy. When he was growing up, he was just like every other kid on this planet, just about. You think your parents are stupid, right? It's a funny thing, as you get older, you realize that many times they had a lot of wisdom. It's amazing how that happens. But anyway, he was a teenager. His father absolutely loved seafood, just loved it. Well, because he usually was ticked off with his dad most of the time when he was growing up, he said, I can't stand any kind of shrimp. That was one of his father's favorite foods, was shrimp. And back in the Virginia area, at the time my husband was growing up, it was very plentiful. So anyway, he gets to be in adulthood. He refuses to have anything to do with shrimp. Well, he goes into the Air Force. And while he's in the Air Force, naturally, he gets fed pretty well, but he's really, really hungry. But he always turned away from anything that had to do with shrimp. This one day, he gets off of a very intense, physical, active environment in the Air Force for that day, and he goes into the mess hall. They didn't have anything but shrimp as the main course, and vegetables, and he thought, oh, I'm so hungry. So what did he do? He had to take some shrimp, or not have anything but vegetables, and he wasn't that big on vegetables. So he grabs some shrimp, puts them on a plate, he eats them, and he goes, hey, these are pretty good. What happened? A filter came off, and he realized, he was in his early 20s, he realized that he had had an attitude about a shrimp and eating it, because he didn't like his dad. He didn't like things that his father liked. And he said, gee whiz, that was the first inkling that I had that my father actually had pretty good taste buds. Now, I know that's sort of a silly story, but it's a good example of what we do. It's a good example of how childish we will get. I'm sure you've seen a child say, I'm not having that. That's terrible. They've never even tasted it. They don't know what it is. And then one day they find it. Well, that's what happened with my husband. And that is what goes on in life. When we grow up and we realize that we can make choices and that we do have a right to explore and that our minds are meant to be developed, this is what life is about. It's about living. It's about becoming acquainted with different cultures. Don't put a label on something until you have a chance to really understand it. And we all are going to put labels. And sometimes in experience, we have certain things that are labels that are appropriate. They really are for us. But again, it's an individual thing. So be willing to work with yourself. Be willing to explore clarity with some of your beliefs and your perceptions. And in the process, you may find that you get rid of fear, that you get rid of a lot of garbage that you were carrying around as a very heavy burden in the way of do's and don'ts, and you become liberated. It's absolutely wonderful. And you know the other advantage of doing it? My goodness, you have the advantage of living life with a sense of adventure, because you'll never know what new things you're going to explore through your willingness to do the exploration. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to take a break. Hey, those phone lines are open. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat today. 877-876-5227. Canadians, it's 888-815-9756. Let me light up your life with a little bit of insight. I've got some good things to share with you when we come back, so don't go away. Just a little bit more, and we'll be back Again, phone lines open 877-876-5227, 888-815-9756. We'll be right back.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right, Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272. Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hey, this is Donna Sebo. Well, we have got a wonderful lineup of guests. And by the way, don't forget, not this weekend, but next weekend I'm going to be in San Francisco at the Wisdom Festival. So if you're in that area, be sure and check it out. And come on by. It's in one of the neatest areas. Fort Mason is where it's going to be held. And, oh, it's just such a picturesque environment. Of course, San Francisco is just magical anyway. So don't forget to check out thewisdomfestival.com. Hey, I got to tell you about the guests coming up tomorrow. We've got Chef Rachel Albert Matisse. Yes. And we're going to be talking about a subject that most of us hold dear to our hearts, desserts. But these are desserts that actually don't put inches on the hips. They'll taste good on the lips, but you're not going to end up wearing them. We're going to be talking about the Ice Dream Cookbook. And Rachel has been on my show before, and she is really big into cooking healthy food, this type of thing. But I don't know about you. Sometimes when I've had some of these so-called healthy desserts, I feel like I've got a mouthful of sawdust and a bunch of dried seeds or something, and they just don't taste very good. Oh, but I have to tell you, I've experienced some other that's been just delicious, and she's got some wonderful, wonderful recipes. So you can eat healthy, and you can have delicious, scrumptious goodies. So that's going to be tomorrow, so be sure you have your pad of paper and pen handy, because it's going to come in handy next week. We are going to be listening with heart with Elizabeth Diane. This is just a wonderful, wonderful book. Then we're going to be talking about pets on Tuesday. We're going to be talking with Paul Mann. It's how to take care of pets and also services. How do you pick a pet sitter? What do you do? Well, we're going to find out about a company called Fetch Pet Care. And then we're going to be talking about UFOs. And one of the topics that forever and ever and ever is going to be going on is the Roswell incident. I know you've heard it. Well, I don't think you've heard from Jesse Marcel, who is the son of Mr. Marcel, the man that was out at the site and who actually brought home artifacts from that crash. Well, Jesse is going to be my guest, and I'm looking forward to that. Then we've just got such a wonderful lineup. We're going to have the best of Don on Thursday and Friday of next week, but anyway, let's go to our caller that's on the line waiting so patiently. Hi. First name or initial, and where are you calling from?
It's Barbara. I'm calling from Hertfordshire in England.
You're calling from England?
Yes, I am, yeah.
Oh, wonderful. And where are you in England?
Hertfordshire. It's just north of London.
Well, I'm so delighted that you're calling in. And your voice is soft and gentle, and I wasn't able to hear your first name.
It's Barbara.
Oh, Barbara, it's a delight having you on the air. Barbara, you are a woman of many talents, and what I'm looking at with you right off the bat is you feel like you're at a crossroads. You have a number of options that you're going to be able to choose from. Actually, I'm looking at three, possibly four. You realize that at this point in your life that you want to be very dedicated to writing, to educating others, but also there is a love of travel that you would like to be able to be involved with, and there is also an interest in the paranormal and documenting some stories, historical stories, that people have told you in the past, but also being able to go around and interview people. I guess that's what I want to say. And I'm looking at this, and I think that you are a woman with a tremendous imagination. So if you cultivate your writing, you're going to be able to just do wonderful things with it. And I'm just seeing you enjoying this, just communicating with other people and getting their feedback and being very accurate in what you say and having them review it so that everything is appropriate the way they want it to be stated. And I am seeing you speaking in front of some groups, and I am seeing you doing some traveling. I think you're going to be able to have your cake and eat it too, so to speak. Money is a bit of an issue, but I'm not too concerned with the money because I'm watching dollars coming in to you. I'm watching a financial flow that's very harmonious. And when I look at this, and I look at where you are right at this moment, the one thing I want to emphasize to you is be sure you spend the time with the people who are closest to your heart, because one of these individuals, a female, I believe, and is going to be passing away. And then another person within a year, a gentleman, that, and I really mean that totally, he is a gentle man. He is going to be passing away in about a year, maybe a year and 3 months after this other individual. So it's very important that you spend the time with the people, again, that are closest to your heart. Follow your instincts on this. You will not be wrong. Your intuitive talents are superb. I want you to trust them more. What question do you have for me, Barbara?
What's happening to me? Sorry, I can't hear you very well. Sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. You couldn't hear me. What particular question would you like to ask me?
Well, I've just moved from London and Notting Hill, and I've moved to Hertfordshire, which I really love. Just moved about 5 weeks ago with my 8-year-old son, and he's loving it as well. But I was just about to sell my flat today, which would have been, I mean, sort of, it was just about to exchange tomorrow and then complete next week, and I just found out today that it's fallen through. So I was, you know, quite sort of devastated about that because I thought financially everything would be great. I can move forwards and not have to worry about money and, you know, buy another house and, you know, I was really looking forward to it, so I'm quite sort of, you know, gutted today, really.
Well, don't be, because what you've got two other buyers that are going to be interested in your flat. I think it is actually a blessing that this did not sell, did not go through, because the people that wanted it are encountering some financial difficulties. So be glad it didn't go through, because if it had gone through, this would have happened after the completed sale. And it would have really tangled you up badly. So this is not a bad thing. The next two parties, and there's two different parties that are going to want to buy the flat, I would say take the better offer, the one that is going to clear the most quickly, and then I think everything's going to mellow out. I'm really not concerned about this because I am seeing a buyer.
Okay, fantastic. Okay, I haven't had a relationship for a long time. I'd like to have a relationship, but you know, I've always wanted my life to be working. I feel really at home here now because it's lots of green and, you know, very calm and peaceful, much more spiritual. you know, hopefully I'll be able to write now I'm here, especially if I don't have any money worries. And,
well, you're going to do very nicely there. You are going to find that there are so many people around you in Hartford and in surrounding communities that you're going to have the opportunity to interact with, to be able to interview. Barbara, I have to tell you, I'm out of time, dear.
Thank you so much. It's lovely to talk to you. Many blessings.
Thank Bye-bye. You for calling. I know it's quite Thank late in England. Thank you so very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. This is Donna Siebel. My goodness, we are out of time. It has been a delight sharing this hour with you. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Don't be afraid to explore. You have got so much inside of you that hasn't even yet been recognized by you. And I want you to turn on that light inside so you can really see how big a beam you really do project by being just the person that you are and more. This is Donna Siebel. We'll be back here tomorrow, same time, same place, right here on bbsradio.com. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Siebel Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Siebel Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.